And now, the thrilling continuation of the SML podcast.
Slapping people to wake them up on a podcast just seems like the perfect thing for SML to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people come in thinking we're some like super hardcore serious show. We're about having fun on SML, and if that means people staying up for 26 straight hours and getting slapped by someone with a huge arm, that's perfect.
Oh, well, I should have known that, so I could I could arrange for him to come here, and we could do the real show.
Oh, we could do that on the next episode, next time you guys are on.
Okay, the slappers from LGM. I see you have the profile picture. You have a cat. Is that cat with you in the office or near you, or that's your trademark? Or
I'm trying to think which cat it is. Is it sitting in a box?
No, it's walking over someone.
Oh, that is my cat Noodle, who actually passed away a few years ago, and I've just kept that picture as a memory thing.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I believe on Twitter, I have a picture of a cat sitting in a box, and that's my other cat, Potato, who is currently on my desk trying to walk all over my iPad. Because she
you have a nice choice of names for cats.
Noodle, Potato. We also have Punk, Piddles, Peaches, and Coltrane. Named after Augustus Coltrane from Gears of War, tiny female kitten named after a gigantic black man.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, we have a herd of cats here.
That's how 5-6 of them. How many is that?
5 right now.
5? Oh, that's not too much.
It's a lot.
Depending where you live. If you're in a small flat, then maybe it's a lot, but...
It's small-ish, but we make do. We don't have any kids, so at least we have these little dickheads.
Oh, well, that's nice. I have 2 cats and 1 dog in a small apartment, so it's nice. We have, so to say, enough room, let's say, if they're on my head or somewhere. We make do.
As the cat jumps on my desk again.
You need to introduce your cat to the interview as well.
Oh, she makes herself known all the time.
She wants to participate, apparently.
Here, Potato, say hi. As she just rubs her face on the microphone.
Sorry, Joe, do I need a camera or just audio?
No, just audio.
Okay. I'll turn it off just to save some bandwidth.
Yeah, I'm not pretty enough to do a video podcast. No one wants to see what's going on here.
What?
Oh my God,
what?
Potato,
what?
Get off the desk.
You need to have some fish ready so you can throw it away so she hunts it down.
Oh, I wish. No, instead she'll put her head in a shoe.
That's a good choice.
Is the dumbest cat we have ever met in our life. She was a stray who was just laying down in the middle of traffic. Just laying in the middle of the road, rolling around like, hey, someone pet me. I'm in the middle of a road. So we ended up taking her, trying to find her owner, and no one would either say that they had her or admit that they had her. And we ended up just keeping her, and now that everyone knows how stupid and cute she is, everybody wants her. We're like, no, we got attached. Fuck you. Too late.
Yeah, you rose her worth. She's valuable now. She's an asset now.
Every time we post a picture of her on Facebook, we have to put the hashtag potato book so that all our friends could keep track of her. So any questions from you guys about the show?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how usually you do that. If you could give us just a few words, how it looks, what kind of questions, how long does it take usually, just to be on the safe side.
The only pre-written questions I have are from my one co-host who got the Steam copy of the game. He sent in an email since he couldn't be here himself. And then length of time is entirely down to you guys. Whenever you guys want to finish things up, just let me know and we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I like it. I like the style.
Yeah, we are a very casual show, so you can say what you want, do what you want, curse as much as you want. We're just about having fun.
That's allowed too.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Okay, nice.
I'm not sure I have a sufficient vocabulary in English curses, but I'll do my best.
Then you can teach us Croatian curses.
Oh, you don't want that. That's so Balkan.
Well, we all grew up on Hollywood movies, so I think we can manage with American curse words.
What movies taught you cursing?
Huh. Well, all of them. For example, South Park. South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Yeah. That's the one I like the most. I think they said they mentioned the word fuck like 347 times or something like that in hour and a half.
That's amazing. That's one of my all-time favorite movies as well.
Yeah. Mine too.
Oh, my God.
I liked the cursing on French in Matrix, where the guy is talking about how smooth it is to curse on French. But I can't remember what he said, but it sounded, if that's really a curse, it sounded awesome.
Beautiful.
Oh, I have to move my iPad before the cat knocks it off the desk completely. Potato has decided to actually completely lay down on my desk. So now I legitimately have to work around her. Potato, you're the worst.
I see who's the boss in the house.
It is never me. I can guarantee I am never the one in charge here. I might hit record and set up interviews, but when it comes down to it, the cats just walk all over me, usually literally all over me, just so they could get on the desk and piss me off.
Well, not being in charge means you have less responsibilities.
Yeah, there you go. Potato, conduct the interview.
Yeah.
You're doing a bad job at this, Potato.
She needs to learn a lot more. That's why she's with you.
Yeah.
She wants to be the best. She's watching. She's observing.
She's my apprentice.
Yeah, she's probably writing something down with her claws in the desk. Just a reminder for the next show.
Very, very true. But I guess we'll kick this off. What's up, everyone? This is Joe, episode 143 of the SML podcast. An interview episode today where it is me and Potato being my apprentice, sitting in and watching and attacking the mic stand. We're interviewing two of the men from Little Green Men Gaming. Hello, fellas. How are you doing?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Would you like to introduce yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do?
Okay, let me start. My name is Mario Mihoković. I'm one of the co-founders of the Little Green Men Games. We are from Zagreb. It's in Croatia. For those that don't know, Croatia is in Europe. You can't find it on the map. It's too small. So anyway, it's in Europe, very close to Italy, if someone needs to know. And we are our job is creating games, mainly space games. Sandbox-based games, and I won't go too far in that right now. I'm too tired. I can't remember what's my complete name, so doesn't matter. Zeno, to you, who are you?
Hi, I'm Zeno. I'm community manager in LGM Games, and I'm in charge of the name says it, community, be it on Facebook, Twitter, official forums, Steam, Good Old Games, and soon Xbox forums.
So you are on here to talk about the upcoming Xbox One port of Starpoint Gemini 2. Tell us a little bit about the game for people who don't know what it is, never heard of it, never heard of you guys. What is the game and when is it coming out?
Okay, well, the game itself, it's coming out on December 11th, so it's in a few days' time. The game is basically, it's an open-world space game, tactical space game, with quite a lot of RPG elements. Now, the one pretty special thing about the game that makes it rather unique is that in our game, the accent, the entire accent, is on tactical space combat and on capital ships. So our main idea was to create, let's say, our own version of Star Trek universe, something like that. So in our game, there are no single-seater spaceships. Every spaceship has a crew complement that can vary from 15, 20 members on smallest ships to 200-300 on largest ships. So everything, the tactics in the game, the way ships move, the way they conduct their missions and everything is entirely created to picture the capital ships, the crew management, and traveling all around the Gemini system, which is completely free. There are no loading points. Game is streamed, and there are no artificial barriers, meaning that from level one, players can go wherever they want in the system. That doesn't mean they'll necessarily be alive when they get to the dangerous areas, but they can try go there.
I found that out the hard way.
we intentionally didn't want to warn people. We had a discussion, should we alarm people if they're going to two dangerous areas? And we decided, no, let's not. If you're traveling through unknown space, it's hardly likely that you'll end up with a huge sign by the space lane saying, oh, this is a dangerous area, you're not ready for this. So we decided, no, let them find out when a fleet of enemy carriers jumps across their road, I'm pretty certain they'll get it.
There's 19 red ships in front of me, and they all say alarming. Should I be worried?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Well, fuck, I guess I should have been worried. Oh, well.
Look at it on the bright side. At the beginning of the game, you have a very small ship. It turns very quickly, so you can be very fast to run away. You need to use that in the beginning.
Yeah, definitely.
Before I get too far into my own questions and observations, co-host Pappy, who could not be here because he has something called a job, he put
horrible.
Some, yeah, what a dick. He put some time into the Steam version of the game. He does a Wednesday streaming session called Pappy Plays, and he put, I think, an hour or two into that this past Wednesday, and this is an email from him with his comments on the game. He starts off, the game is pretty damn big. There's a lot to do in campaign mode, and it looked like free roam was damn near infinite. Between the gameplay and the sheer amount of upgrades between crew, weapons, armor, and ships, how much time did you spend developing this beast, and how big was the team?
Let's try playing number games. How big do you think the team was?
Well, normally in a game like this, I would expect a team of a couple dozen, but given I'm talking to indie developers, I'm going to say that you guys are insane and did this with like six people.
Okay, you're not too far off.
close.
The project was, when we first started it, it was back in late 2011. I'm talking about the sequel, not the original game. We had three permanent team members and one, let's say, occasional team member.
Jesus.
And during the development of the game, and it came out in early access on Steam and was pretty big success, we increased. So on the release date, that was, I think, 2 years later, on the release date, we had seven permanent team members.
Oh, wow. That was a pretty big hiring phase you went through.
Yeah.
You doubled the team.
We had to. But when you're so low on manpower, it's not hard to double. But it looks great on papers when you tell someone, oh, I'm doubling the workforce in just 1 year. It's not too problematic going from 2 to 4, but it still looks awesome.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would expect that there were a lot more people involved in this game than normal. But I kind of have the advantage because I've done so many interviews on this show of teams that are like, yeah, we put out this fully polished, well done game, and in only 2 years, can you guess how big the team was? And I'm like, I'm talking to the team, aren't I? And the one guy is like, yeah, you caught me. It was me. And then one guy did the music. So I kind of knew that when you ask a question like that, it's loaded to the point where it's not going to be 40 people on your team. It's going to be four.
No, I don't think we'll ever have 40 members of the team, to be honest. I wouldn't like that, actually.
Too many cooks in the kitchen, right?
Yeah, indeed. And if everybody brings his favorite animal from home, then we'll have a zoo.
Yes, a zoo. Anyway, he continues on with his email with another question. Why am I so terrible at 360-degree combat?
He's not the only one. I'm the same, and I have like 250 hours in Steam version of the game and like 20 hours in Xbox version of the game. That's why we have a line to plane option. Default button is, I think, P, which will align you back to the plane because I'm so disoriented in full 3D that it hurts. So he's not the only one. I feel him.
I absolutely love that you have that option, too, because I'll be flying somewhere and I'll be like, wait, wasn't I going over that way? And then I'll click the thumbstick on the Xbox One controller and it'll switch everything around back to how it should be. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, I was heading the way that I'm heading.
Yeah.
plus, it can be confusing. The original game was on plane. And
To the plane.
Yeah, it was much easier for us to create the entire mechanics around it, but it lacked something. The space didn't feel like space. It needed the third dimension. So yeah, we created that. We tried to minimize the bad effects of it with using before mentioned the align to plane options, and we also during the creation of levels you can go. As much high and as much low above and beneath plane as you want, but the all main objects in the game are pretty much close to plane. So it's probably never going to happen that your main objective is offset on a elevation axis like a million miles up. So that probably won't happen ever. There are additional bonus quests and bonus objectives that you can reach by leaving the plane, but that's something players will have to explore themselves. We try to minimize the possibility for them to get lost, but I don't know. The space needs to be 3D, if I'm asked.
Yeah. And Elite Dangerous has a similar trick. So they also have a full 3D plane, but it has upside and downside and planets all around, but you can come to the end of the universe, let's say like this. It's infinite, but you can still hit the floor or the bottom in the game.
Plus I have to admit one thing. Our 3D modeler several ships he made, he actually made them, they look their best designed from beneath. And if we didn't introduce the full 3D, you would never see that part of the ship, which is best looking. So we had to create an entire mechanic so we can show up with the models.
That's really interesting stuff to hear of how you go about doing it and setting things on different planes and where in planes and hiding stuff, basically. And to think that the best looking part of a ship would be the bottom, I wouldn't normally think that, but now I have to pay more attention when I'm fighting things and getting lost trying to circle around and flip around these guys that keep circling around me. Got to look at the bottom of their ship. Check out that ass of the ship.
Yeah.
Yes.
In combat, you can try using different cameras. We have on Xbox version, we've actually added a few new camera modes. So there are you can experiment with the different camera modes. Some of them will partially turn the ship in relation to your target, to where you're firing. Or we added some new stuff. It can help to a degree, but yeah, still you need to get accustomed to full 3D that enemies will be everywhere, not just left and right.
Yeah, I do have to appreciate the fact that you guys have an option of I don't remember the exact name of it, but it's basically all hands on deck for like shooting all the guns at the enemy. Basically,
yeah, fire at will.
Fire at will. That's it.
Yeah, that was introduced because players wanted it. That did not exist in the original version of the game, nor PC nor Xbox. But
thank you for adding it.
Many players asked that, and well, not a problem. I personally, I was opposed to it. I gotta say. But after it was introduced, yes, I'm mostly playing with it as well. I'm ashamed to admit I didn't want that option, but yes, it's useful. And I,
especially in the later part of the game, when you have a much bigger ship, many enemies are spawning around you. You have to micromanage your equipment, your skills, your mercenaries, fighters, and it's hard to just target and shoot because we are not a shooter. It's a whole micromanagement beneath it.
And I like that it basically just shoots the normal weapon for you, because that still lets me man the heavy weapon when I have someone in my sights. Plus, I can still take a couple of shots if my AI isn't doing it for me.
Yeah.
Pappy's next question, you touched on Elite Dangerous. He says, Sandbox games in outer space seems to be a fairly tiny genre. Was it a tactical decision to release a game where there doesn't seem to be much competition? Although we've already mentioned Elite Dangerous is competition, it doesn't seem like a huge genre in the long run.
Well, at this point, no. But actually, no, it wasn't. It wasn't an intentional decision. It was a
enthusiastic decision.
Yes, the roots of the decision are back in 2006 and 2007 when we created our first game. That was done by two people,
and I was sobered by them.
Yeah, I won't go any further than that. But anyway, at that time, we weren't a real company, so we had nothing to lose. We were a bunch of boys playing with cool software. And we decided we want to make the game that we wanted to play, the kind of game we wanted to play, and there weren't any such games except Freelancer and Starfleet Command at that time, and we wanted to give a shot to do something different and to revive the genre. And we knew it's a very, very risky decision, because that genre was basically dead at that time. Even the few games that exist today weren't even on a drawing table at that time. Yeah. So it was a pretty big risk, but we just decided, okay, we don't have money, we don't have company, we don't have budget. So if we're not going to take that chances now, when we're basically not risking anything, we're never going to do that. So let's do that right now. And if we, pardon my French, fuck the things up, doesn't matter. Who cares? We'll do something else or do some other game or whatever.
I didn't hear any French there. I don't know what you're talking about. That sounded like good old-fashioned American fuck to me.
Okay. Usually people censor me when I use words like that, so I have to be careful.
Fuck that. Say what the fuck you want, man. You can fucking say anything you fucking want here.
Oh yeah, I feel like I'm in a ghetto. this is a pretty calm and very very relaxing show. Yeah. I don't mind if you call me a few more times. This is pretty nice. I could get used to this.
Yeah, it's relaxing. Yeah,
hey, we love having guests on the show. We love having new people on, and I can definitely say that of all the guests that we've had on, we've never had any complaints about our show being boring or too formulaic. It's like we don't sit down and pre-write questions of like, well, explain us the metaphors of this part of the game and how they relate with your own personal
life. Don't use this because you're scaring me.
It's like, just tell us cool shit about your game. That's all we want to know. I mean, we're fans here. You guys make cool shit that we get to play, and you're awesome enough to talk with us about the cool shit you made. So we just want to talk to you guys.
Excellent. And you allow us to use all these cool, shitty words in your show.
And another thing that Mario mentioned that originally we didn't plan to introduce a fire at will option. And the other thing that we didn't plan to introduce and was not originally planned for Starcraft Gemini 2 was the hangar. People actually wanted to collect their ships. They wanted to collect all of them. So we introduced the hangar that you can store your ships in, transfer command, scroll through them, or just brag about your ship collection. So that's another thing that was a community request.
Let's not go too far in hangar. I can remember our hangar incident during early access. I really don't go there again.
Now you have to explain what you're talking about.
Okay, it's best now, so I can explain it. I was pretty embarrassed at the time. Well, people asked for hangar, and we said, okay, why? I mean, you have a capital ship. It's a big ship. Your entire crew is on that ship. Why do you need two ships? And they really nicely explained to us that they would like to collect ships, at least one from each class, for different purposes. And we said, okay, this is nice. How are we going to call that? And they said, let's call it garage. And it was like stupid idea. I mean, spaceships in garage. But okay, it was called the garage, actually.
Yeah, and, it still is.
We introduced the feature. And we tested the feature for it didn't exist. It was pretty hard to create it one. And we made it. We tested it. It was pretty good. It worked. The saving of all ship statistics and everything we changed on ship worked. And blah, blah. Everything was awesome, peachy and stuff. And it was, I think, fifth or sixth update during early access on Steam. We introduced Hangar in one of these updates. And then we realized that we've done a slight mistake. We gave them embedded Hangar with all ships in existence in the game. And suddenly people that were level 3 and had like 5,000 credits on their account, they suddenly all had a hangar with about 70 or 75 ships fully equipped with few dozen million credits. And, the worst thing of all is we've decided, okay, you cannot fuck us up. We're going to do this. We improved that the same night we made an update and corrected that. The problem is the freaking Steam has something called fucking cloud. And all the saves and everything were stored on cloud of players. And we deleted and improved everything, but every time they restarted the game, they got the hangar, all ships, saves, and everything back from Steam. And
actually
something we could not improve, no matter how much we tried. We basically had to ask people, would you please delete all ships you have and destroy your saves, because you won't have anything to do in the game if you have everything right now. But most of them didn't listen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Wow.
So our top secret 70 ships weren't top secret too long.
Wow.
But you know what they say, shit happens. But
beauty of early access.
That's a lot of shit to happen at once. Damn.
That wasn't the worst. I really won't go further.
Oh, there's more to it?
Not to this incident, but there were a couple of incidents during early access.
Oh, do tell. Yeah. This is the fun stuff of the show.
We had something that people called ghost planets. It was some kind of a memory leak where you used T drive or something to hyper jump in the other sector. You would just see a shadow of the planet you were visiting before, and it was just chasing you and stuff like that. So people liked that feature bug. Let's say bug, but they wanted us to implement it as a feature to have those ghost planets chasing them around. And there were times that we had some character portraits that would appear as a texture on the planets. So basically huge head would look at you in space. People were freaked out. What the fuck is this? What's happening? So stuff like that. It was fun.
I really don't need to tell you. I didn't know about that bug at all. I first saw it when someone made a screenshot from early access version and placed it on Steam. And I was looking at that, and I was first. My first impression was, someone's fucking up our game. Someone is playing with some shit in the game. And then the man sweared, no, it's a screenshot from the game, from the actual game. This happened. This huge fucking face with the scars and everything is staring at me. It's a face of a size of a galaxy. And yeah. I said, no way, it can't be. We went to check, and yeah, there were dudes star size all around space. And it was, man, it was really freaky. I was scared shit when I saw that.
That is fantastic. Holy shit. How do you fix a bug like that?
First you beat your programmer, then you contain him to the dungeon level of the office and don't release him home until he's done with the bug.
No food for you until you fix this.
No food for you.
Probably, yeah.
Glass of water every 5 hours, and that's all you got.
Man, that I love stories like that of just weird, screwed up bugs that, like, that shit that you can't see coming. I mean, there's no way to really plan for something like that. It just happens, and then you got to figure out what made it.
Oh, you saw this coming. The guy's eye was bigger than your carrier. It's absolutely impossible that you didn't see it coming.
Yeah, but those stuff was something that defined early access as a learning experience, and the community help that we got from them, the feedback we received, it was awesome. I mean, some of those people are, I'm proud to say that they're my friends now, because I'm talking to them on a daily basis for last 2 or more years. So it's fantastic. I mean, bugs like crashes to desktop or blue screen of death, those are unpleasant bugs. But these kind of funny bugs are actually cool stuff, because we can talk now about it and laugh about it.
Yeah. And it's cool that friendships could be formed because of a game getting screwed up. And whoever these people are that are actually actively helping you in early access, that is what the early access program is for. And that is what previews and betas and everything like that are for. So many people today look at betas and previews. Like, even I was a member of the Xbox dashboard beta, where, you know, we got to try out the new dashboard early, and you would have access to features like backward compatibility early. And so many people would beg to be in the beta program and then bitch and whine when things went wrong. It's like, you're in a beta program. You know it's a beta. Shit is going to go wrong. Just so many companies today use the term beta, open beta, as like, oh, come beta test our software quick. But it's the weekend before a game comes out, so it's clearly just a demo.
It's early start. No,
we actually our entire early access on PC version lasted for I think a few days more than a year.
Yeah.
So I gotta admit, the plan was not to be in early access for a year. That was definitely not the plan. But we stayed in early access actually because of the community. Because I was quite surprised. Our average players are, let's say, mature people from 30, 35, 40 years. And the level of response and the level of how useful the responses were and suggestions, ideas were so great, we actually added, I think about 30% of all features in the game are added as a result of community suggestions. They did not exist in the original plan. So
that's awesome. That is awesome.
On the one side, they really helped us a lot to improve the game. On the other side, they dragged us in early access for over a year. But for once, I got to say, I'm not sorry at all. Sometimes it happened that we had a certain feature and it lacked something, and we needed to improve or add some detail on the feature to make it completely useful and reliable in-game. And we hit a wall. We didn't know what to do. Nothing we imagined did not work. And we sometimes we made a thread on Steam forum and asked people, this is the problem. What do you think we should do? What do you suggest would work best with this kind of game? And within, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours, we got like 100 suggestions. And wow. some of them were actually great suggestions, very usable. And sometimes we got the suggestion from a guy that's actually a programmer. And he actually made half of the code needed to implement his idea and send it to us and said, try this, maybe it works.
Yeah.
It was really incredibly amazing. I was shocked. I'm the first one to admit that early access experience was nothing I expected. Absolutely nothing I expected.
Yeah, but there is also a difference because if we were making like FPS, like Call of Duty or something, the community would be different. We have older, mature community. We have people that are 65, 70 years old. So those people are patient. They're old school gamers. They started back in the 80s on Elite and stuff like that. So it's a different approach to them or to, let's say, Call of Duty or some, I won't say kiddie game, but game for younger generations. So yeah,
I definitely can't see if Treyarch was like, hey, could you give us some opinions on this feature in the new Call of Duty? 90% of the comments would be like, go fuck yourself, nerd.
Yeah, because it's a different mentality and much younger generations and impatient generations.
Yeah, I'm only 35, but I'm already part of the old crotchety man generation. With like goddamn kids these days and their goddamn Calls of Duties. Back in my day, we used to play Mario uphill both ways in the snow.
Well, we are both 35 too, Mario and me.
Yeah, we're all the same age. And in gaming terms, I gotta say, I feel like I do belong to older generation. Personally, I have nothing against younger generation players. They have some habits that are really cool. And I just can't keep up with that. But they bring some awesome new stuff. But they also live much faster. They're less patient. They see life different. And it has some advantages, definitely. Sometimes I'm sorry I'm not 20 because I see they are living through some cool shit that I missed. And but still, I don't mind. Everybody has his own.
Yeah, well, the attention span of the younger people is much less because there are also many more games on the market today than it was like 10 or 50 or 20 years ago. So they just keep losing interest and because they want to try everything, and you cannot.
Yeah, that's just a generation problem. I mean, like, I'm gonna say I can tell them if I'm arguing with them, I'm not, but if I would. I would use something like, oh, fuck you, I'm enjoying every game properly as you should for months and everything. And what can I say? They can only respond to me and say, well, fuck you. That's why I play 500 games a year and you played nothing. Using their experience, their way of approaching things, they will actually be more experienced gamers than we are. They will play much more. Much larger number of games. They will see more stuff. They will experience more stuff. It has its advantages. I, for example, needed 3 months to finish Doom, and I always played games slow because I never was in a rush. There weren't that many games. I had no problems playing all the games that existed.
Yeah.
I was never in a rush. I don't know if I would do the same thing today. I have much less time to play games today at all. But today, if I have time to play, I really do have a serious problem. I have a shitload of great games in my library, and I don't know what to play. And yes, I play everything for 20 minutes, and I'm crazed because I cannot choose which game deserves my 20 minutes of free time.
Dude, I'm the same exact way, and I have the added pressure of I have to play so many different games to talk about and review on the show, because our show has been blessed to be getting more and more review copies lately from indies and from larger developers as well. We just started, we got Deadpool from Activision, which I think is a pretty cool get. And I have to play as much as I can to make sure I could talk about all of these different games on the show. And then when I have my own time to go play something, I don't know which of those dozens of games I want to go back to and keep playing, or if there's other stuff that I bought myself that I want to keep playing. And in the back of my head, all I'm thinking is I need to play more Fallout.
Yeah, tell me about it.
That's in my mind as well. I just got Fallout 4, and I haven't even installed it yet. And I have a dream. In a few days, Christmas times will come, and I'm hoping we'll get a few days off. I mean, honestly, it's probably not going to happen, but you can't blame me for hoping. And if that happens, I promise I will start Fallout 4, at least start it.
It's not a problem to start it. I mean, I started Witcher 3 on Xbox One. I started GTA 5 on PlayStation 4. And I'm playing various Steam games, indie games. And I didn't finish anything because there's no time.
I don't even know if I could think of the last game that I actually beat beginning to end recently. It might be something like Diablo 3. Which was probably so far ago, but something I've still played so much because of how replayable it is.
Yeah. It's a great game. I actually did. I finished 5 days ago. I finished StarCraft 2. Mm. And that's the first game I finished in about, I think, 2 years, something like that.
A Legacy of the Void, new Legacy of the Void.
Yeah. So...
Now, here's a question I have. With how large your game is, what percentage of players do you see actually completing the game?
I actually don't know how many of the players completed the game, but it's... I don't know what do you mean by completing. If you refer to storyline, the main storyline is actually not that long. But if you're referring to achieving all the stuff you can, getting the biggest ships, best equipment, greatest level, greatest rank in commanding your ship,
reputations, best mercenaries,
that can take a while.
Or how about, I'll even go off one of the Xbox achievements for the game. What percentage of players can you imagine actually exploring the entire universe in the game?
Many of them. On Steam, we have many people that actually explore the universe because it's something that will lead you either through campaign or storyline or free roam, freelance missions, side missions. I mean, if you really get hooked on the game, you will explore it eventually. I was just looking at those achievements today.
I can say one thing. One of our most veteran players, he's from Australia. He calls himself Tanvaras. He became a pretty good friend of ours. Yeah. He bought the game by mistake. He didn't want to buy the game. He didn't care about the game. He didn't know the game exists, actually. He was searching for something else on Steam. And he accidentally clicked on our game.
Misclicked, yeah.
Yeah, when it first entered Early Access, and he looked what that is, and he said, well, what the hell, I can buy it. It's a space game, maybe it's good. So he accidentally bought it, and he pumped up 1,000 hours of gameplay during Early Access.
Wow. And
in Early Access, we didn't have a single-player campaign at all. It was only free roam. So, but to this day, I gotta say, I'm surprised what he actually did for 1,000 hours. I don't know, but I think he pretty much explored everything. I don't think he missed anything.
That is impressive.
Yeah, and there are more people. We have people that have over 2,000 hours in game, so they also explored everything and played all three classes through the storyline and free roam. So, yeah, there are people that... Achievements are not that hard to get.
Except for a few weird ones. On PC version, you have an achievement where you have to commit suicide by ramming the sun.
There is also that achievement on Xbox. I just finished it today for fun. And the other one, which says that you have to get the piece of meat and the hogwash liquor. It's like brandy in Gemini Universe. And you have to have both those in your cargo and go near the sun, and you will get a barbecue, a Gemini barbecue achievement.
It's I've been looking for that stuff to try and pick up so I could run into a sun, but I accidentally got the achievement for running into a planet back when I first started, and I wasn't too sure about all the controls yet. And I laughed my ass off that I got a 100-point achievement for dying.
Yeah. So some of them are 100 points, like that Gemini barbecue and Crash on Planet and stuff like that. Yeah.
I have different achievements. You have achievements for example, if you kill an enemy without shooting at him, or there are different. Some achievements do not depend on how long you play. They're just. They're just weird, and you have to do something by accident or whatever. But you can't actually straightly try to achieve something. Or if you play the entire game, you'll have all achievements. You won't. There will be a few missing.
Speaking of the achievements, I've noticed that this is the second game I've seen so far. This and Night Squad. It has a couple of really big point achievements. And then there's a bunch of achievements that aren't worth anything at all. What was the decision behind making achievements that are just 0 point achievements?
Well, when we made the achievement lists, everybody in the team had his own ideas what the achievement should look like and how useful it should be, and we got like 5 or 6 lists of achievements. Then we had a good fight. And no one prevailed, and we basically put all of them. So it's a result of a brainstorming of people that view achievements on a quite different way. So
And some achievements will give you nothing, some will give you more, because to balance them all out. Because getting 100 points for doing that Gemini barbecue, it's a fun achievement, and you have to find it in the list because it's not something that you will accidentally do most of the time. So they're worth more, and finishing the campaign or some storyline mission is worth less. So it was just made to balance it all.
Plus on PC, there are a few achievements that are not just visual stuff for bragging. Some achievements on the Steam version actually have an impact on game. So they're
in-game bonuses.
They're actual bonuses. Wow. So when you achieve them, the game changes. You got some new stuff, or you can do something easier or a different way.
Yeah, that's a Steam feature, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. The main reason I ask is I know that there is a section of Xbox One gamers that are hardcore achievement hunters, and a lot of gamers look at a game that has achievements like yours that have a bunch of 0 point achievements, and they're like, I'm not even going to bother with that. Like, why work so hard for a 0 point achievement? And they'll just ignore the fact that there's a bunch of, you know, fairly standard to get 100 point achievements. It's everyone just wonders why you, instead of making a bunch of 100 and a bunch of 0, why not just make them all 50 or something?
Well, because we're special. What can I say? It's a combination of smart and dumb decisions by us, but you can't escape it. You have to admit your own mistakes.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, games like Halo, the Master Chief Collection, gives you altogether 6,000 achievement points for the, I think, all 4 games. And Starfield Gemini gives you 1,000 points for a game. And in the end, if you want achievements, it doesn't matter if you will get 3 achievements for 0 points, and then 2 for 200 points. The result will be the same. If you beat the game, you will get about 1,000 achievement points. So I'm not sure how much achievement points has, I don't know, Witcher 3 or Tomb Raider, new Tomb Raider or something. Because in Witcher, I noticed that I can play for like 2 or 3 hours without getting any kind of achievement. Not a combat one, not a quest achievement, nothing.
Oh, come on, you could have done that in our game during the time when achievements didn't work. If you play another game, you wouldn't get anything.
Yeah.
I just figured that with such a big community out there, big into achievements, I would at least ask the question. I personally, I've gotten past the point in my life where I give a shit about the achievement points. I mean, I like getting them, but I'm not one of those guys who's going to sit down and demand to get 1,000 out of 1,000 in every game. I don't have time for that shit. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Me neither, but I do like getting them, actually. It's a strange psychological game. I'm happy getting an achievement, although it actually means nothing, but I'm happy getting an achievement because the game told me I got something. So,
and many gamers have some kind of OCD, and when they start collecting them, they just need to have all of them and have that 1,000 of 1,000. So, yeah.
Yeah. Pappy actually has a few more questions in his email. We've kind of ignored him for a little bit, but I guess I'll go back to his email here. He asks, is there any way to fast travel to an anchor? And if so, am I an idiot for not figuring it out?
there is a way. There are a few ways of fast traveling in game. So if he refers to jumping on a different area, for example, for a completely different part of the universe, that you can't anchor across on the other side of the jump. That you can't do. But wherever you come, and if you want to anchor remotely, you can open a star chart and then open a menu options on an item, on an icon on star chart representing station or anything dockable. So you open a menu on star chart on that icon and you press anchor immediately. And then the ship will go to auto fly mode and it will increase the speed as much as it can without making extra jumps. And then he will fast travel to that location and anchor directly.
Yeah. And there are many ways to travel through Gemini universe. I mean, at the beginning of the game, you don't have money to pay for all those equipment. But first of all, you have your standard speed. Then you have power to engines mode, which will increase your speed, but you won't be able to shoot. Then you can redistribute the energy between shields, weapons, and engines. So you can additionally boost your engines via that mode. Then you can hire officers that increase speed or maneuverability or something like that. And you can buy equipment which is called Speed Booster, which will additionally increase your speed for 75% for next 20 seconds, I think. Then you have Riftways. Those are those green currents in the universe, which are just like some kind of space highways. Then you can use wormholes, which are unstable and will damage your ship, kill some of your troopers. It's a tumble, right? but it will usually get you from point A.
Can I jump in for a moment?
Sure.
Regarding wormholes, we left them as they are. They had to be changed, but they weren't changed because people made a little story that doesn't exist, but it's an awesome story, so we decided to leave it. So the wormhole is essentially the same as T-Gate. But you don't have to pay for it. You just enter the wormhole. It exists naturally, and it can jumps you to the other part of the wormhole, and usually. But wormholes are unstable, and they can have several outcomes. So your ship can get damaged. Your ship can get some crewmen killed or some military personnel killed. Troopers that are meant for boarding other ships, they can be killed. Or wormhole can eject you randomly to anywhere.
Any other wormholes, yeah.
So you can enter and end up in the middle of the Empire, for example. That can happen. And people noticed nothing. They didn't mind anything except for the thing that wormholes regularly killed part of your military personnel, your troopers, for boarding purposes. So they actually made up a story that... Well, our wormholes are actually the habitats of Gemini gods, and when you enter wormhole, you have to make a blood sacrifice to pass through the wormhole, and you need to select a number of your troopers and kill them so you can pass. And it was actually an entire story. The many people joined the discussion. They made an entire story. It was almost religious thread on Steam that explained all the intricacy of wormholes and everything. And basically, when you peel all the layers, it was actually a bug. It was nothing else but a bug. But now it's a godlike creation, and the version of what wormhole is that were created by players, I actually like it much more than what we did. It was just left as it is.
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the best gaming mantra ever.
Yeah, and you can also go to, there are two more ways to travel. That's T-Drive, that's equipment, that's pretty much expensive, but it's a lifesaver. T-Drive is a small hyperspace jump, and you can use it anytime. If you're surrounded in combat and you realize that you will die, you can just insta-jump to any other point if you have T-Drive available. It's equipment that you have on you, and you have to restock on them, and they're pretty expensive. So there are plenty of ways to travel fast around the Gemini universe.
Oh, and one thing people didn't get, many people didn't realize that at first. When using that equipment, you have a tool belt on your game interface, so you can quickly access equipments and use them. They give you special abilities or some extra movement that you can do if you have them. And many people, when using T-Drives, did not realize that they can use more than one. They use the T-Drive, and they notice on star chart, you see a circle, how far you can jump with that. But if you move your cursor on star chart and go beyond that region where you can jump, it will increase the second layer of jump. So you can go even there, but that will spend two of your T-Drives at the same time. And you can go as far as you want, as long as you have these. If you have 10 T-Drives, they're incredibly expensive, all 10 of them. But if you want to spend all 10 of them, you can theoretically jump from one part of the space to another. And many people didn't realize it from the start, in the beginning.
And of course, you have perk points, which you get every 5 level, and there is a perk that increases T-drive radius. So basically, if you max that out and use 10 charges, you can basically diagonally jump from one part of the universe to the other. So
you forgot one way to travel, Zeno. It's a special equipment called CTD. It's called Crash to Desktop, and it instantly throws you back to your Windows desktop, absolutely free of charge, very fast, and unfortunately, in the last versions of the game, it's fairly rare. I mean, almost non-existent. But if it
happens, consider it a blessing. I mean, you're just lucky if it happens now.
Yeah.
It's a very rare thing now, but well, if you search really hard, I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
But now you can crash to home screen, not to desktop, so it's basically CTH or something like that. But I didn't crash for now on Xbox version, I have to say.
Yeah, I haven't had any issues crashing on the Xbox One version myself either, so
yeah.
It's been running nice and smooth for me. Pappy does have one more question, and then kind of like a little farewell thing to wrap up his email. I'm not sure how well this will work with pop culture in your area, but he says, why does the main character, Adrian Faulkner, look like Jude Law giving me bedroom eyes?
This is an interesting question. Zeno, would you mind answering?
Well, Adrian Faulkner is your character. You wrote the story, so explain yourself.
Well, I think it has something to do with the fact that when we were working on a story for the second game, we were actually entangled in a few other jobs with it, with a lot of insomnia and occasional alcohol problem. And I think that's the consequence of that horrible time in my life. I'm very sorry about that.
Hey, no reason to apologize. I'm sure it makes Pappy happy. So,
well, if it comes as a community suggestion, we can in the next installment we can kill Adrian Faulkner immediately on the first mission. I don't have a problem with that. I think he looked not good.
Yeah.
Either that or hire Jude Law to do the voice.
Oh yeah, that would be nice.
That would be cool. And main admiral has to be Patrick Stewart, definitely.
That works.
Yeah, definitely. And Morgan Freeman is a narrator, and that's it. Yeah.
Well, if you ever need another voice, let me know. I'll do something for you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm hoping that we are not going to do voiceovers ourselves ever again. On the first game, we did voiceovers ourselves. Our only equipment we had was a microphone that costed like $3. And that was our studio. And we did a voiceover. And people asked us for the first game, why the hell do all characters sound like Bulgarian terrorists? And they actually weren't wrong. When I listened to my own voice, it was a very strange thing to hear. And plus, we had so few team members that on the first game, we had a little bit less than 50 characters different in the game. And every
it was team sold member, before people, yeah.
every team member had to do like 7 or 8 or 10 characters, and sometimes characters met each other in during missions, and I was talking to myself using a different tone of voice, or at least I thought I did a different voice.
Oh my god!
but actually, when we released Origins on Steam, which is practically a port of Starfleet Gemini One campaign. To new engine, people said that they liked that old voiceovers better than the new ones because they had some kind of B-movie charm or something like that. Yeah, they all sounded like terrorists with Russian or Bulgarian or Romanian or Croatian accent, by the way. But still, it's fun. You can hear the enthusiasm behind those voices.
Still, I don't want to expose any player on the world again to that, because my ears bled, and I really like our community too much to do that again to them.
I just like that you referred to it as Bulgarian terrorists.
Well, I never
and
met
so they told us. I never heard of the Bulgarian terrorists.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't know if they sound like that. I don't know. Personally, I think I sounded like an idiot, but... okay, if it has some ethnic connection, okay, I can believe that.
Anyway, Pappy ends his email with, seriously, this game is huge, and while I'm terrible at it, I can imagine people spending hundreds of hours immersed in the world. Hell, I managed to spend too much time mining asteroids for fun and profit. This isn't a question, I just wanted to commend you on making such a monolithic game with actual stuff to do. Now, if only I didn't suck so much at 360-degree combat.
Yeah.
Again, learn to use fire at will.
You can tell him one more thing to avoid that. When he targets an enemy ship on the right analog thumbstick, if you press it, you can switch between two camera modes. One is free camera look, and the other one is locking on the ship he's targeting. So basically, wherever that ship flies around him, the camera will always be focused on it. So that can help him not to lose the ship he's fighting.
Well, if he listens to this episode, he'll hear that advice, because yeah. Fuck him, I'm not telling him. Let him suffer.
Personally, I can only tell him, extending my thanks for giving the game a good chance, and I hope he gets accustomed to the 3D. Real fast. I really hope he gets better. But it's. I admit, this is not a game that any player will master in 5 minutes. It's definitely not. But I really think there's a lot of things to do, and I think it's a very rewarding experience. But requires
in the long run. Yeah.
It requires some adjustment.
Yeah, I gotta admit, when I first started playing it, I felt super overwhelmed by the size of everything in the game. But it just felt so easy to just get into it, and when I would need to know something, the game would be like, hey, pause the game. We're going to pop up a little help window so we can tell you what the hell you have to do right here. And then it would help me, and I would know what I'm doing. I could still get kind of lost and confused here and there, but for the most part, despite not being very good with the open world space sim, I feel like I'm doing a fairly decent job playing it, and I'm having fun with it, and that's all that matters.
Well, yeah, Starcraft Germany 2 is very easy to learn. So the basics of combat, flying around, buying stuff, it's easy, but it's hard to master. We have people on Steam that are playing for a long time, and they actually found the perfect builds for some ships that have 100 or more percent soak damage, so they're basically invulnerable and stuff like that. So jeez, mastering the game is pretty hard, and it takes a lot of time, but flying around and killing stuff, it's fairly easy to get a hang of.
And it's just relaxing. If you just want to fly around and explore space and just chill, yeah.
It's a medically approved game, definitely.
Yeah, it was told on forums that just if you don't fight with anyone, just flying around, grabbing asteroids, destroying some scenery around and selling stuff and getting rich and exploring all the nebulous galaxies and everything. The people told us it's so relaxing, and they're trying to treat medical conditions with that. So yeah, they like it from that perspective. I'm not sure. I mean, I like to hear that, but I'm not even today. I'm not sure if that's actually a great praise or or some of them are trying to find better words to say. Your game is boring if you don't fight.
I would look at it as praise, because it's games, open world sandbox games always come down to playing how you want to play. Yeah. And if people can find a way to have the game relax them and calm them and just explore space and enjoy the sights and sounds, that feels like a great way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they're using your game to do it.
Yeah, there's one small detail that, at least in PC version, most players didn't get at the beginning, and that is main logic. And they thought you go through levels, you play the game, you do stuff, you do missions, you do whatever you do. You need to grab money, you need to grab experience, levels, then you buy big ship, bigger ship, biggest ship, and so on.
Game
so,
over.
But We actually intentionally try to make it a little bit more complicated. So, yes, you will have an easier time on bigger ship most of the times. But getting bigger ship actually doesn't necessarily mean that you're stronger. Sometimes if you're careful what you do with the skills you choose, with the preferences of your captain and crew that you're building, and the type of weapon you're installing on your ship, sometimes you can use a mid-sized ship that is so effective that it can obliterate three classes larger ship without a problem, and vice versa. If you just buy a default carrier ship and you don't properly equip it, that ship will suck. It will be big, huge, horrible. It will roar on the enemy, but it actually won't do any serious damage. So it... sometimes people were disappointed by that. Like, we have a super big ship, I should destroy the galaxy. Yes, big ship will destroy the galaxy, but big ship needs a lot of love. Needs a lot of weapons, of taking care of what you do with that. Plus, on biggest ships, you don't have one thing you have on smaller ships, and that is cloak.
Yeah, and it's a complex game. I mean, you have to so many factors to include, because as I said, people are making the perfect builds. We have a guy who actually passed the full game with his starting ship, which is like a small ship, and he actually finished the main storyline with it, because he found the sweet spot with officers, enhancements, weapons, skills, and you can make fantastic builds and almost make yourself invulnerable. So it all comes down to skills, really.
Just a quick information, playing the game, finishing the storyline campaign with starter ship is something that no one in our team succeeded to do, and we tried.
Wow.
Nobody succeeded to do that. We were close, but nobody actually succeeded. And that guy took down dreadnoughts and carriers with a ship that has two weapons.
Yeah.
Two weapons.
And
he posted some videos on the internet, what he did. He actually used all the firing arcs of the big ship has a lot of weapons all around the hull. And he could fire in every possible direction. But since he is big, he has a blind spot. And he actually succeeded to find a blind spot where not a single weapon arc cannot fire. And his ship was small enough to keep in that arc, and he was pestering the big ship like he was following him through half of the galaxy, but he actually destroyed it in the end. And that's a big feat, because when you destroy a ship that's 10 times bigger than you and a greater level than you, with destroying only that one ship, you get a huge boost of experience, of weapons, of materials, of ship, everything.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. But as I said, I never succeeded to do it. Never.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, it looks like that guy's going to be hired for your next game.
I think he should be.
Definitely.
Well, guys, it has been about an hour now that we've been chatting. Is there anything else about the game that you would like to talk about?
Well, I can only mention one small thing. There are a pretty large list of changes from PC to Xbox version. And there's only one thing I would like to mention. Everything else will be released on PRs and everything. It doesn't even matter. But there's one thing I really wanted to mention for the community that are listening, because that's something we actually forgot to mention to media, and it's pretty important. On Xbox version, you can save the game anywhere you want in universe. On PC version, that was never allowed. You had to be anchored on a friendly docking port to save the game. And it really, really annoyed a lot of people. And that has been changed in Xbox, and they can save pretty much wherever they want, and it will load it. So that's one thing I forgot to mention to all the media, and you have an exclusive news right now.
Yeah. And also, people ask about DLCs. Starpoint Gemini on the PC has three DLCs. One is Secret of Aethera, which adds new side missions, storyline missions, events, stuff like that. The other is Origins. That's I talked about it. It's a complete first Starpoint Gemini in the new engine. And the last DLC is Titans, which actually introduces the new class of the ship. It's Titan ship. Those are beasts. And people asked if those DLCs will be ported on Xbox 2. Well, it all depends how well will the game be received, of course. So we do not have anything against porting the DLCs, but I don't know if this kind of game will be widely accepted on the Xbox, in the Xbox community, because there are not many of them. You have Elite Dangerous, and that's practically it from space games on Xbox currently, I think. Maybe I forgot something.
No, that's about all I could think of. And if Elite Dangerous is doing pretty well, there could be a nice bit of audience that wants to check out what you guys have to offer as well.
Well, I was always puzzled, and I asked media on Gamescom, what does it mean that there are no space games on Xbox? Does it mean that we are the lucky ones that are breaking the ice and coming through the ID at Xbox to the console, or that the general population of Xbox does not want games that are this complex on the console? So time will tell. We will soon know.
So the game comes out on the 11th. How much is it going to be?
Price-wise?
Yeah.
$34.99, I think. I'm not even sure, because it's something like that. The price was aimed to be approximately the same as on Steam. So there's no difference. And the rules of setting up a price is sometimes complicated, and I'm not even absolutely sure what the what the last decision was, and it also depends regarding on market. So I think it's not going to be the same for every market in the world, but the price will approximately be the same as on Steam.
All right. So just about a week away from release, I wish you guys all the luck in the world with the launch. I thank you from the bottom of my heart of coming on and not only talking with me, but making me laugh my ass off with your stories. This has been a fantastic interview. You guys are welcome back anytime. Just give me a heads up and I will talk to you anytime you want. And I guess normally this is the part where I ask you guys for some final words and you'll say something witty or funny, but I think it would be funnier if you just, in Croatian, curse out Pappy for not being here.
Okay. Is he okay with that?
I don't care.
Does this breach any kind of media rule or anything?
No, I am...
I don't know the guy. Why do I need to tell him something ugly?
Well, there are many, many episodes where I have personally ended it that he's not on by saying, "And Pappy, go fuck yourself." I basically tell him to fuck off every time I talk to him because we've been best friends for about 2 decades now. So I give you my permission, which is all the permission that's needed, to just insult Pappy as much as you can.
Okay, I'll take it under one condition. You need to gently explain him that this is only for educational purposes, so we can exchange some linguistic specificities of languages. That's only for educational purposes. So,
well, if it's going to be educational, after you do it, you'll have to explain what you said. And then it is educational, because then you're just teaching us a language.
Okay, Mario can say something in Croatian, then, and I will translate and explain.
All right, go ahead.
Mario?
Wait, I'm first? Okay, so here it goes. Papi jebise.
Okay, so basically, he copied your joke, so he said, Papi, fuck you. In Croatian.
Can you repeat how that sounded in Croatian?
Papi jebise.
Okay, and how does it go to Joe?
Joe, jebeno nam je lijepo bilo s tobom. Which actually translates to Joe, it was fucking nice to be with you.
Okay, I need to double check one small thing. Can you, Joe, please say that curse in Croatian? I gotta see if you got the spirit of it, so Pepe understands it well.
Let me see if I got it right. Pepe jebise.
Yeah, that's right. That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck off, Pepe.
city. The last Yeah.